It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
I found nirvana! I win!
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only. Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by 1 run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, winning isn't everything. Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hello and welcome back to Pod in the Time. My name's Taylor Payne and it's a pleasure to be joined by George Culkin and Chris Woff. Chris Woff, resplendent in Real Betis shirt, is that Chris?
It is retro Real Betis shirt.
Don't see many of them.
Good job, because it's awful.
It's quite ugly, Chris, I'll be honest.
It's modernist, I put it that way, isn't it? Like a modernist art sort of almost. And yeah, very blocky, but I like it. So yeah.
Is it a Kappa shirt? It's Kappa,
isn't it?
Kappa,
isn't it? Yeah. Classic.
Nice.
But I'm good, thank you. How are you? You sound a bit under the weather.
Yeah, I've got a bit of a croggy voice. Yeah, I'm a little bit lurgified at the moment, unfortunately. But I'll get through. Chris, you know me. I don't like to complain about
never,
these things.
Never,
I just soldier on and I get on with it, you know. George Corkin's there as well. George, you're resplendent in what I can only describe as a Louis Theroux jumper.
Yeah, I get that a bit. I've had that a bit, particularly where I'm wearing these specs.
Yeah,
I've had that before.
It's not a bad look. I'm just saying that it's the look.
Thank you. I still have some eyebrows, unlike him.
Fair play. Right then, we've got a lot to get through today, chaps, haven't we? We'll start with headlines in 30 seconds or less. Back to the Future. How's Newcastle Evolution rebooted, Chris?
Yes, Newcastle United's 1-1 draw and Nottingham Forest had a lot of the same issues that they've been all season in the way that Newcastle threw it away in the end. But the interesting element was the team selection, or more those players who were not selected, and we will get into it in the show. What does that mean? What does Eddie Howe talking about the future actually mean?
And that's Charlotte. Charlotte Potts retires. That's such a stretch, George. Come on.
Oh, come on. It's good. Yes. Sad news, but also happy news at the end of last week. Charlotte Potts, inspirational defender for Newcastle United Women, has announced her retirement. She's had a really tough time with injuries over the past 18 months or so, but fundamental to the side that took Newcastle up into the Championship. She is also pregnant, so huge congratulations to her from us, and she has promised to come on the pod after a short break, so looking forward to talking to Charlotte about her career pretty soon.
Lovely stuff. So long, Ami Obi, but not so fast. Charlotte to take on a new role, Chris.
Yes, Charlotte Ami Obi, Newcastle United's loan manager, former player, obviously, a current ambassador and ambassador of Newcastle United Foundation, does a lot for them. He is moving away from the loan side of things at Newcastle, where there's going to be a bit of a reshuffle, but he is staying at the club and he's going to take on a sort of expanded ambassadorial and corporate role, overseeing that element. It really will suit his skill set. But yeah, interesting given all we've talked about loans so far this season.
And big Dan Burns' little bench chat.
Yes, so not the substitutes bench. This is about Mental Health Awareness Week. I interviewed Dan about a fabulous community programme which is seeing topics of conversation being put on benches, park benches around Newcastle, to for people to talk about their mental health. You'll hear from Dan a bit later on, and I will explain a bit more.
Wonderful stuff. Right then, let's get into it, chaps. Eddie Howe's team selections are the source of much discussion at the moment, aren't they? Let's get into the nitty-gritty about what we think he's trying to do and maybe bust a few myths in the process. So comments in press conferences are often riddles, aren't they? People are variously putting two and two together to get 3, 4, 5 and sometimes 27, George.
Well, yes. I mean, I've said this before. It's always worth remembering. I mean, I've sometimes been in press conferences and kind of got really angry when it feels like managers are not telling the full truth. But that was when I was young and naive. And you have to sort of realise that these things, they are often propaganda. Journalists are not often, very often, not the main targeted audience. Sometimes managers are talking to their rivals, they're talking to other teams, they're trying to get into the head of other clubs. I don't think Eddie Howe does that, but very often you're talking to your own players, and sometimes you're talking to your own fans. I mean, I've talked about this, you know, many times, you know, when like intelligent, articulate people like Alex Ferguson or Arsene Wenger would say that they didn't see a incident or a penalty or a red card or whatever. It's a load of bollocks, but, you know, that's not who they were talking to. They were protecting their own players. We shouldn't necessarily expect managers to be telling full truths. And obviously, there are plenty of reasons why managers can't always tell the full truth in press conferences, you know, for players with contractual issues or, make, you know, can't talk openly about transfers. And obviously, Eddie Howe famously rarely tells full truth about injured players because he doesn't want to give the opposition an advantage. So, yeah, we always have to take what's said in presses with a pinch of salt.
There's been a little bit made, Chris, of the one eye on the future quotes recently.
Yeah, well, just to pick up on the team selection, what was I found particularly fascinating about Sunday was that actually personnel-wise, there was only two changes from the weekend before, and yet it feels like fundamentally there was so much of a shift, and that's beyond the personnel. There were people who moved positions out of position in a few circumstances, and also a slight change in formation, although that when I put that to Howe after the game, he'd suggested it was very similar to the formation they played before. I think talked about how Willock the weekend before and even down in Arsenal had been it almost in that free role that then Nick Voldemort took over from. But the one eye on the future, I'd sort of compare this to remarks that Howe made recently about what I had discussed last week on the podcast when people were, I think, conflating when he was talking about bringing in six players in one window and that moving forward, suggesting that Newcastle wouldn't then sign six players this summer because Howe wouldn't want that. It was more, there was a context he was providing there, and I think it was building on the messages he's been given behind the scenes, what he'd said at Matfin Hall, what he said elsewhere in recruitment meetings. Not that he's saying we shouldn't sign six players this summer because they're going to have to, given that the number of players are going to leave, but basically that this is not ideal for the movement, the squad moving forward. When he was talking about the future as well, I think some people have taken it too literally and have taken every single decision on Sunday to have been that and talking about, oh, well, Dan Burn's not the future at left back. And it's like, no, he probably isn't. But it wasn't every single decision that he made was not that this player is going to be here, this player's not going to be here. It was sort of, there's individual cases as to where that's more applicable than others, particularly to people who were left out the side, who didn't come in. And it's the same with, I mean, we're going to come on to Lewis Hall in a second, but there's a lot of people talking about, well, Lewis Hall isn't the future right back. And no, he probably isn't, but I also, I find the sort of anger with that selection weird in some ways, as in I don't think he was necessarily brilliant then. You could see he was struggling because he's predominantly left-footed. He's got a reasonable right foot, but he's predominantly left-footed. But I think that was with the future in mind, because Newcastle need to sign fullbacks this summer, probably on both sides. But if Lewis Hall can be seen to be able to play on right at right back, does that mean Newcastle could sign a left back instead if they're struggling to sign a right back? Because if they've got two left back fit at once, but one of the other ones injured, Lewis Hall could go over to right back. It's almost like experimentation within experiment, as things stand right now, to see if Lewis Hall can do that. He's done it within games, but to start matches. So, yeah, I just think people have taken this far too literally, and this is Howe saying every single selection over the weekend was a feature. Dan Burns a feature left back. I don't think that was the case, but there are individual elements within that where it was.
Is it that literal, Chris? I mean, or is it not more that, I mean, you know, Dan Burns is not the long-term future at Newcastle, but he does have another year left on his contract with an option for another, and I don't think anybody would anticipate him leaving this summer. Same with Lewis Hall, obviously, you know, a very, very fine player who I'm sure a lot of other clubs would be looking at, but there isn't that sort of sense of, you know, sense of anticipation that he might move. So in that sense, is it not about the future, that those two players are likely to stick around? Because, I mean, the thing I found sort of interesting was, you know, Kieran Trippier has been involved recently, he's had to play, and then all of a sudden he's not in the team. And Joe Willock, who arguably, I mean, I would say played, you know, played well at Arsenal and then did pretty well against Brighton too, is suddenly out of the team and not coming on at all. And we are expecting him to leave. So it seems like there's almost been this short-termism of we need to kind of get a result, we need to get a win. And then now that's happened, suddenly there's this eye on the future thing, which I guess I don't quite understand that side of it.
Well, I suppose that here they got the win against Brighton. It was only one win, but they did get the win. Trippier has been phased out a little bit more over the last few weeks. I mean, Miley was being selected ahead of him at right back, so I don't think that's an immediate thing. The Willock one was very interesting because I did think he'd been decent, but I do think it was suddenly, right, we've got that win now. Now it is, let's think about more but who's going to be in here next season. Burn, I just think longer term, I think it's unlikely that he will play much at left back the older he gets.
But he's in the team
for that. But I think the Burn selection was more to try Hall at right back. I think it was more, it wasn't that Byrne was selected as the left back and then Hall went to the right back. I actually think, even though Hall hadn't been in the team, I think it was more that Hall was more the future thinking of putting Hall at right back, and then he doesn't have another left back, so then Byrne had to play. So that's where I just, some of what I've read and some of what I've heard subsequently has suggested that this is like, how saying that is a basically next season Dan Byrne's going to start at left back. And I don't think anybody believes that.
No, but I mean, also, I mean, you know, there isn't a right back at the minute either. So somebody has to play out of position. Yeah. And do you turn to the guy that, you know, that doesn't let you down, you know, obviously isn't a natural right back, doesn't want to be playing there at this point in his career, but will happily do that? Or do you put Malik Chow, for example, at right back, who hasn't been doing that this season, and we haven't seen him do that for Newcastle?
Not starting a game. He has moved there in a game, but yeah.
Sorry, yeah. But, you know, or are you compromising with somebody else? I mean, that was how that looked to me.
Another notable absence, Chris, was Anthony Gordon as well. Do we think he's maybe played his last game for Newcastle United?
Well, I think that was the most notable, and I think of the comments that Howe made, that was part. Trippier was within that. I mean, Trippier came on in the fifth minute of added time or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But Gordon it felt quite pointed that he in the general press conference I was in, and this is before I'd heard the subsequent remarks which made at BBC Newcastle when George and I were doing the podcast on Sunday, I said it felt like the undertone was about Gordon when he was talking about the team selection being for the future and who wasn't involved. He didn't directly say that answer to a question about Gordon, but then in response to BBC Newcastle, he ended it. He talked about, he said he's had a hip injury, he's only been back training just the last few days, but also we are thinking about the future. And so that did feel pointed. And I mean, there's a query as to why he was on the bench at all. If I suppose you could say, if Newcastle were really struggling and desperately needed a goal, maybe Howe would have turned to that, and there would have been a short termism about that. But it felt like, basically we are going to have to work out how we're playing up front without Anthony Gordon next season. Was the even stronger than implicit, really, was the way that it sort of came across. And obviously they would like to sign players to replace him, but from the players they have now, who can actually do those sort of roles? And it was slightly odd that it was very back to the future with Joe Linton sort of to begin with. And then Jacob Ramsey came on in a similar sort of role, more change of 4-3-3 by then, and looked more comfortable there, I suppose. But basically, because even Harvey Barnes, who you'd say would be the like-for-like for Gordon as to start on the left wing, didn't start. And then when he came on the right as well. So it was all a bit curious in that regard. But yeah, Gordon is the clear one. I think that's how now, not even trying to have any pretense about it. Yeah. The images have been clear of his agent snapped around Europe trying to put him about. But yeah, so I think that to me felt quite telling.
He was asked a fairly blunt question about selecting Gordon in his press conference as well, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. He was basically asked, he was reminded of remarks he made a few weeks before about how he'd said then that he wouldn't play any player who wasn't fully committed between now and the end of the season. And then he was asked on Friday in fairly blunt fashion, basically said, if you're a man of your word, then can you select Anthony Gordon? And so how sort of almost like...
He sort of laughed at it, didn't he?
Yeah, he laughed and like it was almost like a sort of... I thought he was quite polite, but it sort of felt like a sort of laugh as to almost give himself a second to compose himself rather than, yeah. than sort of answer it sort of in that way. And then basically just sort of said, yeah, well, that's what I will sort of do. But he didn't. He then made it clear that those remarks were not... The previous few weeks had not been about Anthony Gordon directly, but then subsequently, obviously, Gordon's the only player since then who has not played. He has been injured, but he is the only player who hasn't played, of the players you could think about maybe leaving this summer who are sort of the big boys, who hasn't played a single minute since then. So
It's interesting. I find this whole thing sort of interesting, and I suppose I'm struggling to kind of wrap my head around it a bit, because obviously the Brighton win was very important, and it was important in its own sake. Everybody needed a win, but Eddie Howe definitely needed one. But you know, if you then take that forward into Forest, Newcastle weren't out of the picture in terms of Europe at that point. I mean, if they win that game, they would have probably ended up in the top half of the table. I mean, you know, you would argue that it wasn't in their hands. But it wasn't totally beyond the... It's not like suddenly this becomes a moment for wild experimentation. And I'm not saying he has done wild experimentation, but it's not like suddenly, okay, right, we're safe, we can now look to the future. Because surely there's still, you know, there still was a short-term desire to win the last kind of two or three games of the season and potentially have a European place at the end of it.
My response to that, and I suppose Howe's would probably be, as I said at the start, he only actually made two personnel changes, one of which was enforced for Lewis Miley, who had been playing at right back. So the Trippier decision had actually been made before this, even when Livramento was injured. So I know you can say, well, then you're down to your third choice right back, or now your fourth choice right back, why not change at that stage? But he'd already seemingly made that call on that front. Gordon had been playing against Brighton, hadn't been involved, and actually shape-wise, the team shape didn't change. The only other player who changed was Voldemort and Willock. So I think he would argue that it wasn't a dramatic change, but it did feel more dramatic, particularly because he said it afterwards, but also just the way that it looked out on the pitch, it did feel
so
more dramatic.
So if that team is a nod towards the future, does that mean, George, that Nick Voldemort is the future?
Well, I suppose by this logic, yes. But, you know, Voldemort is still a young man. He's Newcastle's record signing. We're not saying that he's guaranteed to leave in the summer. You know, we know that with Johan Wisse, certainly Newcastle would be open to cutting their losses, or certainly have been. That's been the way that it's been sort of expressed to me. Voldemort is different. Whether there be a market for him, I don't know. He does have huge qualities, which we've not seen enough of, I would argue. But time is on his side. And so, to put that a different way, I don't think anybody at Newcastle has written him off.
No.
At all. But they know that to make it work, they have to unlock him, and they have to find a way of his teammates unlocking him. And it was, yeah, so in those terms, it's interesting. It was interesting to see him start at Forest higher up the pitch, not as a number eight, but much more as a number 10.
Back to the sort of point I was trying to make at the start, which maybe I didn't make very well, is that when Howe's talking about the future as well, is I do think, although I've just pushed back on the point you made before, I do think there is an element of experimentation there. So I don't think it's definitive that Voldemort is part of the future. I'm also not saying he isn't part of the future, but I think, again, this is almost looking to, can this be where Voldemort can play? Can I get more out of him if we are going to play this sort of system?
So a degree
of experimentation, I think, with Voldemort there, yes.
Yes, because I think that is interesting. That's been one of the kind of noticeable things since Newcastle went back to having one game a week, and Newcastle were then sort of desperately needing a win. And, you know, we talked about it in previous pods where Howe effectively goes back to the future. It's a very retro looking team. It's got Joe Willock in it. It's got Jacob Murphy on it on the side. You know, it's not a forward thinking team. It's not a future forward team, if you want to kind of use that phrase. I don't really mind about that, because I want to see Newcastle pick the best players to win matches. That's why I'm sort of interested in this debate and how it's kind of flipped a bit. But you would hope that during this time when they are having more time on the training pitch, when they, you know, actually have time to work on things. They've not had that all season until now. That finding a way of making something click with Walter Mader should be, if not top of the agenda, should be pretty much up there.
That's his first start since Sunderland as well. And as a number 10, as George mentioned before, the system, has it changed, Chris, or has it been more adapted to suit Walter Mader?
Well, actually, in the Sunderland game, he did play just off Gordon, but the system then changed back largely to more of a 4-3-3 immediately post the national break. But the last few games, it's felt like someone is playing as Willock, and then Voldemort has been playing as either number 10 or as a sort of floating free role. So yes, it has been adapted. I mean, how pushed back when I'd my question to him was about Voldemort and the selection decision, but also the change of system after the game, and he sort of said, well, the system's what we've been playing the last couple of weeks. So
yeah,
it has been tweaked, and I think Newcastle have looked better in attack for it. You can see that they're getting more bodies higher at the pitch. Whether the balance is there with it like that, I'm not entirely sure. Whether Asula really suits that, someone just behind him, I'm not entirely sure. It almost feels like it eats up some of his space at some points, but they won against Brighton and should have won against Forest, in my opinion, so there are shoots from it.
And Eddie Howe said that he provided the best moments in that first half as well. He slid that ball through for Will Asula, who maybe should have taken the chance first time rather than taking a touch. Would we agree with that, George, that Walter Mader provided some of those good moments early on?
I mean, that was a great moment, and then he followed that up, as Chris said, on match day pod with a kind of lung busting run to help out in defence. That's what you want to see.
He does look a little bit more athletic, doesn't he? I think he looks like he's got a bit more in the tank.
Yeah, and that is, you know, that is a huge, huge part of the game in the Premier League, in English football. You know, getting acclimatised to that when you've not really had a pre-season, you know, in this country. And of course, there's Eddie Howe fit, you know, there's fit and there's Eddie Howe fit, all of that, yeah, you know, all of that stuff. And being physically more robust is part of what he needs to get better at, definitely. And I agree, there were signs of that. I thought, you know, just to repeat what I said, I thought it was beautiful the way that he kind of made that chance. He drew Forest players towards him. That was what created the space for Asula. They're not going to have a partnership that is fully fledged in one game or one week on the training pitch, if that's what it is. And so, you know, we know he can do that. We know he's got that in his locker. My criticism, or the other side of it, is that he doesn't get into the danger areas in the pitch enough. Now, I suppose if he's playing slightly deeper, maybe that's not so much of an issue, but it was still only two touches in the Forest box. I would just say that's not enough, and that's something that we've seen a lot of. Harry Kane can effectively play as a number 10 and a number 9, you know, can drop incredibly deep, but then gets in the box and has shots. You know, it's that sort of impacting on a game consistently for the time that he's on the pitch. Just, it doesn't happen enough as far as I'm concerned.
I always think the thing with Walter Mader is that you see moments like that, and I just, apart from Chelsea at home, there are a few games that I can remember him having started where I've thought at the end of it, he's really affected the game as much as I think he is capable of doing. It's because you can, when he does offer moments like that, you think it is there, and that's why I find frustrating. That's partly Newcastle's, his teammates' fault and Howe's fault for not extracting more from him, but he also has to bear some responsibility from that. So that's my frustration. I always just feel that 90% of the games he started for Newcastle, I feel like there is more that could have and should have been delivered.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And Chris, Will Osula's current first choice, is he now part of the future plans?
Yeah, he very much seems to be. Whether that's going to be starting striker next season will partly depend on who Newcastle can bring in this summer or how they work Waldemar Wissa this summer, who leaves, who stays, who really gets impresses during that pre-season. But certainly he is now, as things stand, Newcastle seem to be planning for the future with him and playing a far more integral role. And he's earned that over the last few weeks. He certainly earned his starting position for now. It's about showing it more often. I think the challenge for Sula, and I've said this before, the challenge for Sula is when teams sit deeper. He's far more effective when there's a high line to attack him behind, to try and break down a deep lying defence is going to be the challenge for him. But he's certainly earned a starting spot at the minute.
And Harvey Barnes came on and scored the goal as well. George, we've got a quote here from an internet gobshite. 15 goals and 5 assists across all competitions for Harvey Barnes this season. The lad should be starting every week for me. And that's from Taylor Payne from South Shields.
When did he say that?
When did I say that? Yesterday.
He scored 16 goals, so you could even have an extra one there for you.
16?
He's got 16, yeah.
Anthony Gordon has scored 17 goals this season. Should he be starting every game?
No.
Why?
Because I need more than that from Anthony Gordon.
Well, don't you need more from Harvey Barnes?
I think they're very different players, personally, and I think what Harvey Barnes does is less flashy.
Score goals.
He scores goals.
Basically scores goals.
I think Harvey Barnes goes under the radar a lot, George, because I think he doesn't do things that get noticed as much. I think he's just one of those players where he puts the numbers up every season and he scores goals. He makes goals. For me, I start him every week over Anthony Gordon at the minute. But obviously, there's other things at play with Anthony Gordon as well.
At the minute, yeah. I mean, but also we know how important a player like Gordon has been in terms of like leading the press with that running, his pace, that focused running, I think is important. I don't think Harvey Barnes does that in quite the same way. I think Gordon at his best when he is focused is the more dangerous player.
I would agree with that. I just don't think he's been at his best enough this season.
No, I totally agree with that. I'm not sure that Barnes has been either, however.
I think the thing with... Sorry, but, just the thing for me with Barnes is it's similar to Waldemar, and it's a stupid comparison to me because of the numbers that you've just mentioned there. But when he starts matches, I always think that it's so frustrating with Barnes because you think there should be so much more because then he comes on at Forest and does that. So that... Sorry to interject, George, but that's my frustration with him, is that yours?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, if I'm being massively petty, which I'm not known for...
No, it's definitely not you.
No, not at all, no.
No.
I've never been known for. I would take issue with that idea of starting every week just because I think you've got to, you know, you've got to do it. You've got to do it in training. You've got to do it in matches. And I think like when... My problem with Harvey Barnes is that when he gets his chance, as Chris says, he doesn't necessarily take it. You know, he'll then score a couple of goals as a sub and you put him back into the team and he doesn't sort of then impact games enough either. But I mean, you can't knock those stats. They're very good and very important. But you know, obviously Gordon's stats, mainly in the Champions League, it has to be said, would stand comparison with that.
Let's talk about Lewis Hall at right back. I know we mentioned it earlier on. What does that actually mean, Chris? There were some online rumours, weren't there, that Kieran Trippier's not being selected due to a financial bonus he may be due if he makes further starts. What can we...
Yeah, so Howe was asked about this, after the game and sort of shot it down and said, it's not entering my thinking. It's only footballing matters that enter my thinking. So, and then Trippier obviously did come on. So if it's just to do with appearances, I don't think it would be relevant anyway. Maybe it's to do with starts, but the Newcastle are pushing back on the idea that's my... Trippier hasn't been selected. It is, as we discussed.
Are we that skint?
He's got Jason Tindall rummaging around down the back of the couch looking for a few quid.
It is that idea of Trippier's not here next season. I get George's point about Europe, but I think because of the position Newcastle find themselves in now and how finds himself in, he is trying to use these matches, given, I think, almost, and this is supposition on my part, but almost the scrutiny there is around his position, rather than not waste this time, but use this time to play someone he knows what they can do in Kieran Trippier, actually use these games as sort of a live exercise for him to help formulate both his transfer plans for this summer, but also his thoughts going into next season, and who can do a job well, who can do a job. And Lewis Hall is excellent at left back, has been excellent left back for the majority of the season. Can he do that at right back as well? Livramento, when they signed Livramento, Newcastle did not know that he could play as a left back. Now he can comfortably play at both. So this is why I found it slightly strange. I will use the word head loss that I think some people had over Hall at right back. I agree that he clearly looked inhibited there. It didn't necessarily work in that moment, and maybe that gets now consigned to history. But I do see the logic in trialing that from a player of that technical quality to see if he can be an option as a right back in case Newcastle think they have more chance of signing another left back this summer than the depth at right back that really they require, given Kraft's leaving, given Trippier's leaving, and given there is still a chance Livramento goes.
We shouldn't forget that earlier on in his career, largely for England, Trippier played at left back.
Left back
a lot. It's something that Howe loves in his players, that, you know, that ability. The fact that, you know, Dan Burner's done it for so long, got Newcastle out of trouble a lot. And, you know, we see it in midfield, we see it up front. It's just something very, very valuable to have in players. You know, you don't necessarily want it. You don't necessarily want it long term, but I mean, it is strange seeing a left back at right back. I mean, I can't sort of think of it happening that way round too often in football, and I don't know why. It always feels that sort of left backs are.
I suppose you've got more right footed players generally, don't you?
So. Yeah, well, I guess that's probably why. Yeah, or
didn't Forrest have a left back at right back for the first half as well?
Williams is he can play both sides, I think. Yeah,
right. Yeah. And I knew that there was somebody was playing out of position. Then he switched again as well when the shape changed. So goalkeepers, fullbacks, wingers, probably a striker or two maybe. We discussed the squad strength in last week's extra time. How many pieces, George, do we think Eddie Howe needs for his jigsaw?
Well, I mean, I haven't totted up the numbers, but once you kind of go through it like that, I mean, it does feel like a lot. Of course, it is partly based on who leaves. It's partly based on whether Newcastle are in Europe or not. Obviously, at this moment in time, not looking at all likely. In which case, you know, depth of squad is less important as it has been this season. But yeah, I mean, like, definitely a goalkeeper, definitely at least one fullback, definitely a wing. I'm going through all of them, and you know, a striker. I mean, again, that depends on what happens, but. Talking about versatility, Anthony Gordon doesn't just play, you know, has played a lot of his football up front this season in that role. So, you know, even if he goes, then they're lighter there. So it's going to be a big shift. It has to be.
Is this, Chris, is this a reboot of a project that went off the rails earlier in the season, trying to evolve into a different style of football, basically?
Well, off the rails, it's probably a bit strong, but I think that they'd sort of lost its way to a degree, or lost. It basically was it had reached the sort of pinnacle, and then had been coming down it for far longer than the start of the season. Really, I think even last year the success was almost against the sort of dying of the light of large parts of this side, which needed evolving. So a different style of football. I don't think, as long as Howe's there, it's going to be a dramatic shift of what they do. I am of the belief that they do need to change quite a lot of what they're doing. I think they are too predictable in some ways, but it seems that Howe's argument, or the way that he seems to talk, is that it will be just about doing what they're doing better, with more time on the training field, with better players or different players who can offer something different, and that's where the sort of change will come, with different players who will offer something slightly different. But they definitely need to evolve, and if they start next season just doing the same thing, without that freshness, certainly the new players provide, then I struggle to see how they are going to be really successful moving forward, because it does feel like they have gone stale to a certain degree.
So George Ferry Howe's picking teams for the future. He must therefore definitely be staying on as Newcastle United manager next season, right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, maybe, yeah,
definitely maybe.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's, you know, that's been the plan. That's been the starting point. Sorry to use the same old phrases. We've not sort of heard anything different. Getting that win against Brighton, getting it in front of the owners after productive meetings. I'm not allowed to say Chapman Hall anymore.
And yet, you've still
Matt Hall. You know, was seen as important. We've also not heard the definitive. I mean, lose 5-0 against West Ham, lose 5-0 at Fulham, then, you know, there might be a different mood about things. That's been the starting point. I mean, I suppose this idea about showing that there's a future vision, or showing that he's trying to find a way into, you know, to kind of get Walter Mader into the team, for example, you know, that is that part of an attempt to show that he's already thinking in those terms. But yeah, we already know that he's, you know, absolutely embedded in terms of plans for pre-season, in recruitment, planning meetings and things like that. So we've not heard anything different.
And obviously Europe is now out of the question as far as everyone except our weirdly optimistic producer is concerned. Why not throw a few kids into the mix, Chris?
Well, I'd just like to take exception to this. So Ollie posted in our group chat on WhatsApp earlier, and he took a quote from my piece on The Athletic, which said, partly because they could theoretically still get into Europe, and then just ignored the rest of the sentence where it just says, oh Lord, it seems highly unlikely they will. That part was just not added into our group, but very much a selective cutting of that part of the article there. So the idea that, I mean, I've said for weeks, I don't think they're going to get into Europe.
Come
on, Chris,
we don't do context.
Very much not, no. But why not throw a few of the kids? And I saw this, and I saw some remarks largely about Leo Shahar, and could he have played a right back at the weekend? I don't know if this for certain, if he still is injured, but he did miss the last couple of under-21 games because he had an injury, so there is that element of it. But also, I just think that's the difference between how thinking of the future in the sense of the players in the senior squad that he has there, who he's looking to see how to use them, and players who I just do not think he thinks are ready for that sort of first-team football element. I mean, he barely gave them a run out, even in those Carabao games, certainly the second one, where it was essentially a dead rubber. And if he didn't think they were ready then, I don't think that 2-3 months on, he suddenly thinks they're ready to be thrown into a Premier League environment. Certainly Sean Neave looks like he's beyond under-21s football now. He needs to go out. Shahar, to a lesser degree, but I think same. Both would greatly benefit from first-team football. Newcastle not being in Europe probably means that they are more likely to go out, actually. And you may say that may benefit them, because if Newcastle win the UEFA Conference League, the likelihood is that those sort of players would be kept around, because they'd at least be on the bench, if not even start some of group stage games in that competition.
Yeah.
Whereas Newcastle don't have those extra matches, and so instead they can potentially be sent out on loan unless they really impress in pre-season, and Howe decides they are categorically going to stay around, because Newcastle's squad's not going to be as stretched next season, and then they will hopefully get regular first team football elsewhere out on loan. That feels like the next step for them. Howe doesn't believe they're ready. You've seen it with Alex Murphy. He just can't. He was on the bench at the weekend. He could have played at left back. He could have played in central defence. Clearly Howe just doesn't think he's ready, or probably more in his case, probably likely to make it as a first team player in Newcastle, because he's slightly older than the other two I mentioned.
It will be interesting though, George, to see what Eddie Howe does on Sunday. Do we think he might stick with this looking ahead to the future sort of scheme, or could he rotate again and mix it up a bit?
Well, I've just got confused by all of this conversation. I don't know what he's going to do. I don't know what he's going to do anymore.
Jason Tindall in defence.
Oh, hey, now we're talking.
Howe has done that in his managerial career, I think. I think he did send Tindall on in the first few years, I'm pretty sure that's right.
No, I don't know. And the thing is, you can't. It's very difficult to predict with this Newcastle team full stop this season, isn't it?
It is.
Just when you think they've turned a corner, it turns into a brick wall heading rapidly in their direction. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, they need to end the season with a bit of momentum if they can, with a bit of impetus. It's the last match at St James's this season. It's not been a happy place for a lot of it. And, you know, they need to sign off well. Whatever he does, he has to kind of go all out for a win. That's very interesting because, you know, if you're talking about a game ago or two games ago, it would be the opposition coming to Newcastle to make life difficult for Newcastle in the circumstances. West Ham, for their very own reasons, can't do that. They've got to get a positive result. They're, you know, for their own position, they're properly on a cliff edge. They're 2 points behind Tottenham. Tottenham don't play until Tuesday night. They're away to Chelsea. They've just got to try and get at least a point, certainly, and you would think a win, just to, if they're going to stay up. So that makes it kind of quite interesting. It could therefore theoretically be an open-ish match, but famous last words.
Is there a prospect, Chris, of this being another sort of mini referendum on Eddie Howe, though, or have we moved past that sort of feeling now?
I mean, it could do, particularly if things go badly. I suppose if people then decide that they need to air their opinions if they want them to be heard. But I think it didn't ever quite reach that stage. There was the sort of teetering against Bournemouth, where if they had gone 2-0 up, maybe it would have turned in that regard. They're clearly the disquiet a lot of fans have about, or increasing number seemingly have about Howe and his future, that hasn't gone away. But I don't think it's like that. Everyone has turned. The away end was singing for Howe at the weekend. It was supportive, and so I think it's unlikely. But if things go really badly wrong, then you cannot rule that out this weekend, because it is going to be the last chance that the home crowd have to sort of get their opinion across. But hopefully Newcastle perform well, as they did in the first half against Brighton, and for large spells against Forest, and get another win. As George said, West Ham, I mean, what a huge incentive that is for them, that actually they can, because if they were to lose, then they're basically just going to be waiting 48 hours to find out whether Spurs can win or not and relegate them. Whereas if West Ham win, then they'll leapfrog Spurs, and the pressure all shifts across. And obviously the spectre of Callum Wilson coming back to St James's Park as well, potentially off the bench for West Ham, is one to, given Elliot Anderson's just scored against them, that's not something anyone will be delighted with if the game's level on Newcastle are behind and then Callum Wilson comes on the last few minutes. Absolutely. Oh well, if Newcastle are leading by a goal, actually, it's probably where this is the most dangerous. But yeah,
War Flags have prepped a Kieran Trippier farewell display as well, which should be absolutely mega. And George, you're writing a tribute to someone who's undoubtedly been a transformative figure in Newcastle.
He certainly has. Yeah, I mean, I think I would argue the most important signing in Newcastle's recent history, not just because of his quality, but being the first through the door post takeover, with the career he'd had, you know, not long after winning La Liga with Atletico Madrid, still a current England international at that time, and him taking that leap. People like Dan Byrne have said that if he hadn't done that, the rest wouldn't have followed. And he's been class on the pitch. He's been a tone setter. He's just been that kind of player. Had some tough moments at Newcastle too, but deserves a fond farewell. And we may be doing our own little tribute to him as well next week.
We may. Keep your eyes and your ears peeled for that.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
So a bit of a reshuffle in Newcastle's player recruitment and development pathway team. Shaul Ami-Obi will no longer be head of loans, but he will stay with the club in a new role, Chris.
Yeah, as we trailed earlier, Shaul Ami-Obi, who's been in that position, I think, 7 years now, is he has been a club ambassador at the same time, and he basically is going to, as Newcastle look to expand that even further and look to expand their global reach further under David Hopkinson, Shola Ramiobi is going to sort of lead that. He's going to be coordinating a lot of that and also basically bringing a lot of the former legends of the club or ex-players and both home and abroad to events and the like in a new expand role, which we're still trying to get more information on. But yeah, he's shifting across, and it whether Peter Ramage steps up and takes over the loan department, whether Newcastle look to bring somebody else in is still unclear. I think at this stage, Newcastle put a lot of resources into it, as we discussed on this podcast on Extra Time with that interview with Peter Ramage. It maybe makes slightly more sense now as to why Peter Ramage was the one put forward for that rather than Shola Ramiobi, because maybe the continuity element there of Ramage is staying, whereas if they'd put Ramiobi forward to be interviewed by us about the loans department and then he left 6 weeks later, then it probably wouldn't, the optics-wise of that wouldn't have been brilliant. It's an interesting one, and Amiobi's I think he's a source of much fascination among the fan base into what his role is, what his role has been as head of loans, how he's performed in that, and he's had a lot of criticism because of the sort of perceived failure of a lot of the loans. I don't think it's as simple as that, as we've discussed about loans, but equally he is shifting into another position, but that's not because Newcastle are not taking their loan department seriously, quite the opposite. They are very much invested in growing this and making it even better.
And I'm sure Ross Wilson will be doing a top-to-bottom review of the whole area of the club.
Yeah, all of recruitment and loans in general he has done since he came in, and certainly in the academy in general, and he's massively expanding scouting operations at sort of those lower levels. There's been some new appointments, or will be new appointments over the course of the next few weeks, which have been reported in the media over the last few days. So Scott Mitchell is coming in. He's currently head of first team recruitment at Oxford United. Now, that was billed by some as sort of like this big senior recruitment position. He's someone Newcastle are pleased to have brought in, but actually he's going to be within the academy team, and he's going to be reporting in to Paul Midgley, who's the academy recruitment director. And then also from Rangers, James Fowler is coming in. He's head of academy scouting at Rangers, and he's coming in to be scouting operations manager, I think is the position he's been given. He's someone who knows Jack Ross, who's Newcastle's head of football strategy, well. I think he worked with him at Sunderland. So basically Newcastle just expanding out these roles to make sure that these positions within the club to make sure that they are as bolstered as possible, and academy is huge for them to on recruitment wise, because they believe that if they can bring through more players, sign them younger, but also bring them through at that younger age, A, they can populate their own first team and save on transfer fees, and B, they can sell some players on, and it's very much an area where they're massively investing in.
Andy Howe's title has also changed as well, Chris, though that isn't necessarily a new thing.
There was some chatter over the last couple of weeks because Andy Howe's LinkedIn profile changed, so to an apparently new position of senior football executive. That's been in the offing for a little while, is my understanding. He was formerly assistant head of recruitment. Steve Nixon obviously is head of recruitment, and hierarchically that was always slightly odd because of Andy Howe's relationship with Eddie Howe, who is his uncle, but also someone he worked with at Bournemouth. Andy Howe has been influential in transfers since he arrived at the club, which was in late 2021, not long after Eddie Howe. And basically, last summer, he was promoted to be de facto sporting director, at least from an incoming transfers perspective. And so this is sort of partly to reflect that the sort of increased responsibility they had. Now, a lot of people will debate how well that transfer window has looked or worked in practice. He inherited a very difficult situation. He was promoted all of a sudden, but equally, the business has not necessarily delivered what Newcastle wanted it to this year. But just in terms of that seniority, it seems that structurally, it was something that Ross Wilson, when he arrived as sporting director, wanted to sort of change that title so that it was cleaner in one sense. I mean, I don't necessarily think it is cleaner in the sense that Newcastle's recruitment department is, or it almost feels like there's sort of two arms in Newcastle's recruitment department in that sense. But it also shows the sort of influence that both Andy Howe and Steve Nixon have in different ways reporting in directly to Ross Wilson now.
And as we mentioned on Extra Time last week as well, Paul Katz and the club doctor may be leaving as well.
Yeah, I wrote about this for The Athletic last week, that Paul Katzen's been offered the opportunity to be chief medical officer at the Premier League, and very much expected that he will take up that position. He's been at the club since 2008, longest serving head of medical in the in the Premier League, very highly respected. He's got a period of notice, so if and when he does tell the club that he is going to leave, because as of when I wrote it last week, he hadn't done that at that stage, but the expectation he was going to go, it probably isn't going to be that he's suddenly just going to go. He may even be there at the start of next season. I don't know exactly how long his leave is, but yeah, it's going to be a difficult person to fill, given how long he's been in that role, given how highly respected he is. But yeah, wish him well if and when he does leave, and fascinating to see who Newcastle can bring in to, because it's such an important role given the amount of injuries that you have in football and how critical we have seen that players not coming back at the right period of time, of course, or being out for longer than expected can be, and how damaging it's been for Newcastle over the last few years.
Is there anything else to report before we wrap this little segment up?
Well, Newcastle under-18s, who we sort of said last week had already secured the highest finishing position in a long while. They ended the season with a very impressive win at Middlesbrough, 4-0 victory. So they are going from strength to strength. Rory Finneran, Newcastle's under-21 midfielder, who is trained with the first team on occasion, but yesterday made the first team appearance, has been called up to a senior Republic of Ireland squad for a game against Grenada next weekend, which is sort of out of window. And it's a very young squad. I think the only sort of recognised international is Dara O'Shea at Ipswich Town. But still, for him to have got that call up is significant, and hopefully he gets game time there and impresses and comes back, and that builds his confidence. And just one other thing, so on an off-field issue, there's been a lot of talk as to whether Newcastle will play this home game against West Ham in their kit for 2026-27, the new home kit, because they did leading into this season. And yes, there's been a lot of response in that regard to this new barcode strip.
Chris, it's rotten, man.
Yes, I know you really don't like it, but disgusting. Each their own, so we'll see if other people actually quite like it.
I mean, judging by what you're wearing today, your taste can't be...
yeah, exactly.
Can't be trusted, can
it? Not quite. But beyond the controversy or otherwise of the strip itself, the part of the reason why it was different last year was, and why Newcastle wore their home kit for this season, in the last game of last season, was A, it was the last game, whereas this year the last game is away, when they will be at Fulham, who will be playing in white, so Newcastle would not be able to play in the home kit. But also, Adidas will remain the kit provider going next season, as they were going to this season, and Seller were last season going this season, but we do not yet know who, if anyone, Newcastle are going to have on the front of their shirt next season, because the Seller deal is up for renewal. Newcastle have yet to agree a front of shirt sponsorship deal. As of about 10 days ago, the information I had was that they were not close to either, because it's a very difficult market. I think more than half of Premier League clubs are looking for a front of shirt sponsorship deal. The changes to gambling advertising on the front of shirts has seemingly depressed the market, and the roughly £25 million a year that Newcastle get from Seller to increase on that is going to be difficult in this stage. So
that the front of shirt sponsor just be a large rectangle block of black and white evenly spaced stripes which take up the whole front of the shirt? Can I suggest that?
Get it in writing to the club.
Come on, you've got...
we'll pass on your feedback.
You've got the CEOs here. Let them know. Come on. This is not good enough, Chris. Just not good enough. Right, let's move on, chaps. George, your restraining order was temporarily lifted, and Big Dan Byrne agreed to meet up with you, but he was speaking for a very important reason, wasn't he? You met him in Leasers Park on a bench. Please explain.
Yes, I should thank the court. For that temporary moratorium on...
Did you have to wear the ankle bracelet still, though?
I'm afraid I did. Do you know what? I've often pictured my retirement sitting on a park bench with Dan Byrne, maybe, you know, clutching a bottle of cider, talking about, you know,
shouting at clouds,
our respective lives together, shouting at clouds. It wasn't quite that. It was very rewarding, however. A really, really good initiative. It's between Newcastle, the club, and the City Council. They have unveiled 11 specially commissioned public benches which have been placed in communities, parks across Newcastle. They have the club's black and white stripes on them and the club crest, with a series of questions, the idea being that they spark conversations about football, life, but also about how people are feeling. And there's, you know, it's an attempt to kind of break silences between people. I mean, it's astonishing to think that in our region, suicide is the leading cause of death for men under 50. I mean, that's incredible to think about. There are QR codes on these benches which direct people back to the Samaritans, to Newcastle United's foundation, their Be a Game Changer initiative. Anyway, it's a great campaign, and Dan has always been very open about his experience of mental health challenges. So we talked about that, and he'd done a lot of chat already about the campaign itself. So I kind of got straight into it with him. And the first bit of our conversation, it was about when he was at Fulham. Now, he'd come from Darlington, he'd signed from Darlington and joined a Premier League club in Fulham, and he really found it tough mentally in those early days, and I started off by talking to him about that.
The trajectory at the start of my career was like quite steep from nothing, and I feel like I probably had a little bit of probably imposter syndrome as well. Like, didn't really feel I deserved to be there, but then I ended up getting an opportunity to play in the Premier League, and it went so south so quickly that I struggled with it. And I know I had things also going on there, like I said, my parents splitting up probably affected us more than I realised at the time, especially because I was the eldest and stuff, so you were trying to like keep everything together and make sure everyone was okay, and that probably had a bit of pressure to us. It all started, I remember coming to a head when we're playing a game, I think I played Huddersfield, I went to clear a ball off the line and like fell and hit me head, and like in hindsight it was like concussion. But like, I just got into my head that like I was ill. Like I kind of just felt like I had like a brain tumor. I like went to see Harley Street, like neurosurgeons. They were like, "No, you're fine. Like there's nothing wrong with you." But there was always like something else. It was like, "All right, fine. I'm not got that, but it must be this thing, or it must be this." And I just got myself into sort of a really bad place to the point where like, I didn't want to really struggle to be by myself. Like my wife, it was my girlfriend at the time, but now my wife was working full time. So I was sort of not seeing her when I woke up because she was already to work, and then I was coming in and sitting by myself for sort of 6-7 hours waiting for her to come back, and I just got into that cycle.
What does that mean, a bad place? I don't, you know.
I just like, well, like anxiety, like loads of anxiety, but at the time I didn't really understand the feelings that I was having, so yeah, a lot of anxiety. Like I convinced myself that I was dying, so like I couldn't sleep, like I had insomnia. That would just sort of snowball, because then like I would be more anxious, and then I couldn't sleep even more. And yeah, I remember I got the point one time where we pulled up to a game at Fulham, and I was in the car park, and I just couldn't get out the car, and I was just like crying my eyes out, and like rang me mum, just said like, "I just don't feel like this anymore. Like it's like, when does this stop? Like I don't understand why. Like I've got this feeling all the time." And she was like, "You'll not feel like this forever. Like, I know it feels like this now, but you'll not feel like this forever." And so I spoke to, luckily Fulham were really good with us. We had a sports psychologist at the time, put us in contact with a counsellor, a therapist, and we just like started going through things really. And like probably the original reason why I went to see him wasn't probably what was the root of the problem. But the more you speak to him and stuff, and then he would just sort of gave you tools. It was like explaining like why your brain makes you think some things that you think, and that like, he would say stuff like your brain just wants to know everything. So like if the quickest possible connection, they can believe that to be truthful, like it'll do it. So like half the time when I believed I was dying, there was nothing wrong with us. But like the brain was just trying to like help us feel like work out why I was feeling that way, if you know what I mean. And then it was like not letting, I felt like bad days would turn into bad weeks pretty quickly, and then turn into sort of bad months, and like trying to stop that cycle. And I said like, even now, like you'll have, like everybody has it, like you'll have a day you wake up and you're like just feeling a bit anxious or something. But back then that would have been something that didn't just stop there, it would snowball quickly. Whereas now I can be like, oh, like Saturday I had a drink, so like Sunday, yeah, of course I'm gonna feel rubbish, like,
yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, like, oh, I didn't sleep well last night, or I was up with the kids and stuff. So like you understand that, but also I'm a lot easier on myself, whereas if I'm not having a great day, like I'm fine, like I'll just like surround myself with like my wife and my kids and sort of keep yourself busy, and like, it doesn't get to that. And I said I don't need therapy now, but I wouldn't think twice about seeking help straight away if I ever started to feel like that again.
Is there a stigma about it? I mean, so if I could you know, take a step back. Mm. You're Big Dan Byrne. You're from Blyth.
Yeah.
You know, you're a tough lad. You're very funny. You're very smart. You're, you know, like, you're not stupid or anything like that.
Appreciate but,
you're very welcome. But like, you know, did it feel like a weakness to you? And were you concerned about how you would be sort of treated?
I was like really a kid at the time. I was like 20 years old, and like, I was playing for like Fulham in the Premier League. Like, what did I have to be feeling bad about? Like, everybody was telling us, like, that was, like, living the dream and stuff, but I wasn't feeling like that. So it was, like, back then it was, I did feel like it was more of a stigma, and, like, it was, I thought it was a weakness saying that to everyone, whereas, like, I know now it's, like, it's the opposite. Like, asking for help's, like, the hardest thing that, like, I've ever done, ever. But, like, it's the best thing I ever did, because now, like, I feel like I can speak about this sort of stuff and know that there'll be thousands of other footballers feeling that way that I felt. I'll can speak about this in front of the lads at Newcastle, and knowing that if they look at me and feel like, oh, like, wow, like, he went through that, like, maybe, like, I might need to speak to someone, that sort of thing, we can help.
Who was it then you physically first spoke to at Fulham when you said that was the most difficult?
Yeah, it was the sports psychologist that was there at the time, like, because I was like struggling even in training. Like, normally training was the bit that was like I could go to and not think about it because I was concentrating on it so much. But then it started getting to the point where, like, I couldn't get through training without doing it, and it was like, it was loads of things. You know what I mean? I was like, when I was like first coming through, I was like, I was on social media a lot, so like it was class when I was having that upward trajectory, because all people did was like for want of a better phrase, just blow smoke up my arse, and I was like the best thing ever. But then like when it starts going the other way, and like I would like the first thing I'd come in and do is like put my name into Twitter, and then like see what people said, and like it would be like loads of good stuff, but then one person was like, oh, damn, being shit, and I'm like, that would affect us so much. And like now, like, it annoys us that I let that affect us, because like I feel like, why did I care? But like I did care at the time. Like I needed that gratitude, or like a gratification that I was like doing well, or and that, and I think that was huge. Like, so like even stuff like that, like I came away from like social media completely, and like just sort of like surrounding myself, and now like I'm at the sort of mindset where like I know what I'm like as a person, as a player. Like, it only really matters what the manager thinks.
Yeah.
Like, anybody else, like, does it really matter? Like, it has no sort of bearing on my life or anything. Like, I always say this to the lads coming through, like, it's hard because I can't say to them, like, don't go on social media, because like that is the world that they live in. But I always say, like, just take everything with a pinch of salt. Like, when it's going well, don't get too far ahead of yourself. And when it's going bad, like, it's always somewhere in the middle. Do you know what I mean? So
that was a little flavour of George's chat with Dan Byrne. But there'll be an extended interview available on Extra Time this week for our subscribers, George, as well.
He talked a bit about the sports psychologists at Fulham who really helped him. And I'd give them a name check. It was Clive Reeves and Danny Holmes. And yeah, we went on from there to talk about the whole season, really, and a bit of last season and the winning a trophy and getting called up for England. But, you know, sort of interesting, the mental challenge of this season. It was something that he spoke about briefly after Brighton when I chatted to him then, and that kind of piqued my interest. He talked about that, you know, coping with going from game to game to game with no breaks, particularly for him now, an international, you know, then not being able to switch off during international breaks. We chatted about Eddie Howe. It was his birthday the following day. He's now 34. He talked about not slowing down and not giving up his place without a fight, wants to win more trophies. We, of course, talked about the World Cup as well. And we're going to play the full interview near enough for our Extra Time subscribers later on this week. It's a lovely chat. He's such a great, great, great fella. And we touched on a bit of everything, but quite dramatic, some of his use of language there, talking about mental health and the importance of speaking about it. He now plays that role at Newcastle. He's someone that the younger players can lean on, you know, very brave to talk about it in those terms. And I think the fact he's done that is now, you know, something that other people can now draw on. He's in a very different place in his life and career now. It's funny, you know, like we think about him as this big, tough lad from Blyth, which of course he is, but it just shows that kind of mental health is something that it's very democratic, if that's the right phrase. It doesn't matter what you look like or how tough you may be on the outside, it can affect anybody. So We will put a link to Newcastle United Foundation mental health programs in our show notes. And, you know, we'll just urge anybody, male, female, whatever, that if you know somebody who is going through a tough time, reach out for them. And at the same time, if you are struggling, then please always know that there's someone to talk to. And yeah, it's a big deal, and brilliant that Dan's part of it.
Well, look forward to hearing that interview later on in the week. If you aren't subscribed yet, but you want to gain access to that and all of our back catalogue of extra Tyne episodes, then please visit podinthetyne.supportandcast.fm. There is also an ad-free tier to listen to the midweek and matchday shows without commercials as well. Get in touch via email, podinthetyne@gmail.com, or give us a follow on Twitter, X and Blue Sky at Pod on the Tyne. Right, thank you, chaps. Thanks for your time, Chris Woff.
You're very welcome. I'll try and get another snazzy kit for you to criticise next week and wear that.
Snazzy isn't the word, Chris.
It is. Jazzy.
Jazzy.
I mean, it's George, it's fuck ugly, let's be honest.
Really, when I say jazzy, it's purely, it's improvisational jazz, isn't it? Where everyone's
it's that unlistenable shit that you can't abide. Yeah. Well, thank you as well, George, for your time.
You're very welcome.
Lovely stuff. And thank you, all of you out there, for listening as well. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, have a good week. We'll speak to you very soon. Goodbye.
I'm answering this one as well, George. I know you did. Do you want
to... Yeah, you're doing the whole lot. I've checked out. Checked out.
He's on the beach.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.